I've always been really, really into stuff. I feel like I can't let it go until like I get to a point where either like I get the answer or it's very clear to me that I'm not gonna get the answer.
Hey y'all, I'm Tommy Tomlinson, and from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Southbound. Conversations with people from all walks of life about how the South shapes who they are and what they do. Every state has its weird little quirks and stories, but not every state is lucky enough to have someone like Jeremy Markovich around to tell them. Jeremy's newsletter, The North Carolina Rabbit Hole, might dig into a dusty corner of history one day, and then the next day might try to solve a tiny mystery, like, for example, how Steven Spielberg, while he was directing one of the Indiana Jones movies, ended up wearing a North Carolina Highway Patrol trucker cap. Jeremy figured that one out. Other mysteries he doesn't figure out. He just leaves them hanging for maybe his readers to answer one day. But along the way, he's built a wealth of stories and a community of followers who are just as interested as he is in the little scraps of life that add up into something bigger. Jeremy has always dug deep, and he's found his calling into diving down the rabbit hole again and again. Here's our conversation. Jeremy Markovich, I want to start to give people a flavor of the North Carolina rabbit hole by talking about posts that we collaborated on. And by collaborated, I mean, I just gave you the idea and you ran with it. Can you tell people a little bit about this weird Fleetwood Mac song from 1973 that has a North Carolina angle?
So this song is actually on a record that I own. And until you told me about it, I did not know it existed. I didn't it didn't register to me. And this is like not like the popular like Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks, like, you know, rumors Fleetwood Mac. This is like weird, more British, a little bit more trippy Fleetwood Mac. And yeah, there's this song called Hypnotized. And it's about like visions and UFOs. And in the song, it talks about a you know, I remember a talk about North Carolina and a strange, strange pond.
Now it's not a meaningless question. Ask if they've been and gone. I remember a talk about North Carolina and a strange, strange pond.
And it talks about being in the forest, the road, the sides are like glass. And so you were like, hey man, what's up with this? I think you baited me into doing your work for you.
Absolutely.
And so I like looked this up and found out it was written and sung by a dude named Bob Welch. And apparently like he had worked with some folks from Winston-Salem, and he's like, yeah, I went out into the woods and I rode dirt bikes and I found it. And like, it was like really like, it looked like it was built by somebody, but it was like, there was nothing leading to it. And it was really, really strange. And so then I had to like track down, okay, where are all the holes that it could possibly be? One, there's a gigantic quarry in Winston-Salem and they called it Quarry Park, surprisingly. And that's not it. 'Cause like in the 70s, it was a working quarry. It wasn't like just out in the woods. And then some people online were like, what if it was, I think I found the pond. And it's like, they sent this like Google Earth thing and they measured it. And they're like, this is it. I found it. And so I figured out who owned the land, called him. And he's like, what? He's like, no, like, this is like my buddy built that pond. It's not even that. It's like 2 inches deep. It's like for irrigation. And I was like, oh, it's from the song called Hypnotized. He's like, I've never heard this song. I don't know, like, as a journalist, as like a capital J journalist, you're like, oh, this is a gigantic bummer. I didn't actually figure out the answer to this thing, but I loved it because I got to learn about something that I knew nothing about. A lot of what journalism is running after things that never pan out. And usually you don't get to write about them. And in this case, I was like, well, I'm going to write about it because maybe somebody out there will help me solve this if I give them a lead. And that never happened. But the point of the story is it was just a really interesting thing I didn't know about. And that's the fun of like doing a lot of this stuff is I just get to learn interesting things and then dive into them. And then I feel like I come out of it a little bit more educated about the world than I did before.
So I want to move on to one that actually a mystery that you did kind of solve. And it involved a girl on a skateboard and then also famous skateboarder Tony Hawk. Could you kind of explain that story?
Yeah. So Tony Hawk, famous skateboarder, if you're not aware, I played his video game over and over growing up, is one of the most delightful people to like follow online. Like he's actually still out there skateboarding. He's old now. He's older than me. And he just is like a genuine guy. And he was like, hey, here's a cool picture. Does anybody know where it came from? And a friend of mine sent it to me and was like, I think you might be able to figure this out. And so got to work. So like the clue was, it's this picture of this black girl. The picture's black and white. It's rainy. And she is very casually like gliding down a hill on like a very old skateboard and like in an overcoat, and she's holding an umbrella. It's like this very zen. She has like this very zen look on her face. It's just like one of those pictures. Like when you see it, you're like, oh wow, that's just a great picture. And so the clue was, it's like from the Fayetteville Observer, 1973. I hope she's still around. Like, okay, I have the newspaper and I have the date. And I tried to like reverse image search, tried to figure it out, found out that like this account called Black Archives had posted it. You know, some other folks had posted it. And then it had gotten to Tony Hawk through like his sort of network of friends and other like famous skateboarders. And so he's like, I'm going to post this. And then started looking up like on the Observer's website and found out this is part of this large collection of pictures that like kind of got posted a couple of years ago. The date was wrong. It was from 1979. And so then I was like, I'm going to hit a wall. I need to call in the big guns. And that's when you talk to librarians.
The heroes of many a rabbit hole story.
Oh my God. Yeah. They were like, those are my people. Like, I'm like, you get me. And they're like, oh yeah, we get you. We got it. This is our thing. So, John O'Connor over the Charlotte Mecklenburg Library, I asked him cause I kind of know him, and he's like, well, I don't know, but I know people who know. I'm like, excellent. Librarian network assemble. He called his counterpart, a guy named Matt Morgan, over at the library in Fayetteville. And he went through and found the actual scan. And then I had a name. And then from the name, then I tracked her down and I got in touch with her. And then she's like, oh yeah. Like, you know, my next door neighbor was a guy, a photographer for the Observer. And he asked like, hey, it's rainy out. Can I get a picture of you going down the hill? And he did. And then he put it in the paper. And then like this photograph that like, she was like, oh, cool, whatever. Moved on. Like, you know, grew up, became, you know, the person that she is.
Quit riding skateboards. Yeah.
Quit riding skateboards. I mean, like, you know, like you do. And then just like this picture was just buried. Like, you know, it was in the paper one time in like 1979. And then through just a random course of events, Andrew Kraft, photographer for the Fayetteville Observer, he's talented, loves pulling old pictures from the archive and scanning them, scanned it, somehow made it to Black Archives, somehow made it to somebody else, made it to Tony Hawk. And then Tony Hawk posts it. I respond to Tony Hawk. And Tony Hawk's like, cool, we found her. And then like everything kind of blows up. And then some folks that I know were able to like arrange like for them to meet virtually and did a whole podcast about it. And then like he sent her a skateboard and she's just like, and she's also like very chill. She's like, oh yeah, crazy, huh? That's nuts. Like, you know, it's just great. And like, again, one of these things where to track down the events that like have to happen for something like that to happen are pretty incredible.
This story reminded me or made me wonder like what that initial contact. So when you contact this woman who was the girl in the picture, who do you say you are and what do you say you're doing? And are you able most of the time to say that in a way that makes sense to the person on the other end?
I mean, I have sort of my little stump speech and, you know, hey, longtime journalist here. Sometimes it's like, depending on how North Carolina, I think those folks are, I'd be like, I used to work for Iowa State Magazine. And that opens some doors. And then I say, now I have this newsletter, and if I think they're really suspicious, I'll kind of say, like, it has this many subscribers, and I do weird stuff, and sometimes I'll be like, this will be the dumbest request you've had all day, but I want to know this thing. And then I just see where that goes. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. In a couple cases, I've tried to ask, like, really famous people ridiculously dumb questions, and I never hear back. But, like, part of what I do is I am not out here trying to be a pundit. I'm not trying to be like, hey, what a crazy picture, here's what I think about this, because I generally think that nobody cares about the opinion that I hold. I think if you wrap that opinion in, like, a lot of facts, and hopefully somebody comes out of even, like, the dumbest story with a kernel of new information or knowledge, then that's great. So I try to at least do the journalistic thing every single time, which is like, I should try to track this person down. I should email them. I should try to get them on the phone. No matter if it's like a very big important thing or a very small, trivial, like, I can't believe you're asking me about this thing. I've done such important work in my life, and you want to know about this dumb thing that I did in like 5 seconds and I've regretted ever since. Something like that.
Speaking of very famous people, I think this may be the post that I thought of as kind of your biggest one in terms of a reach and that sort of thing was the at least locally famous story here in Charlotte of Mick Jagger showing up at a local bar. Could you sort of tell that story and then what you did to get some context there?
I think like the rest of Charlotte saw, like, Mick Jagger just very, very casually just was like posted on all of his accounts online out and about last night in Charlotte, North Carolina. And this is like in September 30th, 2021. So it's been a couple of years.
And to be clear, the Stones were in town ready to play a concert.
Yeah. So he wasn't just like, I love Charlotte so much, I'm just going to come here. He was here for a reason. And the picture is him like in a very like dimly lit spot in front of the Thirsty Beaver Saloon in Plaza Midwood, and he's just got like a black kind of clothing on, kind of black nondescript hat, and he's just drinking a bottle of beer, and nobody is paying attention to him. He posts this, and everybody in Charlotte was like, what, like, huh? I was amazed by this because I then like instantly was like, well, of course somebody had to see him, right? Like, somebody had to know he was there, right? Like, the bartender had to know, or like somebody who was sitting there was like, I think that's Mick Jagger. And the way that these things go in our modern age, right, is like you, if you're a celebrity, you have zero privacy. So if somebody's like, I even think that could potentially be Mick Jagger, you know, they're like getting their phone out and they're like kind of like holding it up a little bit, and they're like maybe, you know, peeking out behind somebody, and they're taking a picture, like they're like, you know, the paparazzi, and they're gonna post it. And nobody had posted a thing. He literally got in and out of there without anybody noticing him. And so,
and they're like six people in the photo, yeah, kind of in the background, and like half of them had their back to him, and the other half could potentially maybe have noticed who he was but didn't seem to
and didn't do it. Yeah. And so I was like, how could this happen? So I like the next morning I called up the owner of the bar and I was like, hey, did you know about this? He's like, I found out when you did, man. And then I started looking down of like, did anybody post anything from the Thirsty Beaver that night? And I found like two or three people who were there, and they were like, well, I was here from this time, but I don't remember anything and everything else. And so I started looking at the pictures and I showed them to like the owner, and I was like, look, I, you know, maybe I should talk to one of the regulars. And I was like, I don't want to make fun of them. And he's like, oh no, you should make fun of them. Like, like one of those dudes paid $400 for a ticket on the floor to go see the Stones. And Mick Jagger was 10 feet from him, and he was staring directly at him, and he did not notice. So like, that dude deserves whatever you say about him. Like, I enhanced the picture. I lightened it up. I tried to see what kind of beer he was drinking. They looked through the credit card receipt to see if they got a signature, nothing. And so it looks like he kind of just slid in there based on some later interviews and kind of just slid in there and had a beer and like, oh, okay, neat place. I'm just going to go check out Charlotte. And he left. Like, that to me was just amazing how that could happen. But if you know Charlotte and you know the Thirsty Beaver. It was the bar that wouldn't sell to the giant developer who was building apartments, so they built it, you know, built the apartments around him, like, you know.
Like these fancy apartments that are literally built around this dive bar.
Yeah. It's the kind of place where, like, hey man, like, actually a famous person could slide in here and do this, and people could, even if they had known about it, they could potentially be pretty chill about it.
One thing I've always wondered about that is, who took the photo? Right? Because somebody he was with had to have taken that photo. And so I'm thinking, you know, Keith Richards was probably hanging out there too. My favorite detail in that story is that clearly he had to, you know, go buy the beer. And the bartender probably served him a beer, but she was too young to know who he was.
Exactly. It's always the thing, like, hey, whatever is important to me and you is not important to people that are younger than us. You know, it's nothing like a humbling thing that happens more and more often. Like, oh yeah, Mick Jagger. And if, you know, you're a certain age, you'd be like, I'm sorry, you have to explain to me who that is.
So I want to ask about one more story that kind of popped up when I was thinking about the stuff you've done. And this was a guy who I guess had sort of become a legend in a way before you got to him online, but I think you sort of enhanced his legend, and that's the great mythological beast named Zeb Ross. Could you kind of tell the story of who Zeb Ross is and why he became the subject of a rabbit hole?
Zeb Ross, he lives out in Western North Carolina. He is in part of this dance troupe called the Jay Creek Cloggers, and they clog. They do kind of these old style of dancing, kind of buck dancing, if you want to get a little more precise with that. And, you know, they're named for an area around like Maggie Valley. So if you want to kind of place it in that area, they do all kinds of shows like Bryson City, anywhere out kind of really far west in North Carolina. They'll be out there, and they've been doing this for like a long time. Like, this is like a way to keep sort of this tradition alive. And Zeb, one day he was out dancing at this farm in Bryson City, and he gets out there and he just like, he's got this like blue polo shirt. He's got this jeans on. He's got like this flowing, like long hair. It's not really like a mullet, but it's just like, I don't know. And he's got this like big smile on his face. And he is like the most confident person. And he's out there clogging. And like, if you watch his feet, it's just mesmerizing. And
it's like, it was like clogging crossed with James Brown.
Exactly. It's amazing. And somebody was in the audience and they were like, I shot video of this. Do you mind if I like put this on TikTok? And they're all like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, they don't really care much about TikTok. And so he does it. He sets it to Here Comes the Hot Stepper. And then it's like this perfect marriage of like song. And it just works in a way that things kind of like just work on TikTok without, there's no way I can explain it. It just works. It blew up. It got 6 million views. And then, you know, somebody puts on Instagram and they like said to like, you know, like a Trick Daddy song. And then that blows up. And then like, he becomes, I don't know, like this legend. They don't quite know what to do with it. And like, Zeb's like, yeah, man, like, well, you know, I work the overnight shift. I'm assuming, you know, I'm working over in Weaverville. I'm like, machine operator. I got to drive a forklift. He's like, yeah, man, just kind of the thing that I do. Like, I kind of do it for exercise. And yeah. Like, I mean, like it did not, I don't want to say it didn't register, but it did not like affect him at all. It wasn't like, oh, been waiting to get famous and now it finally happened. He really just stayed the same kind of person. Like, nobody knew, like, people had to tell them this was taking off on Instagram and TikTok. And it led to like him getting on stage and dancing in front of Peyton Manning at the Country Music Awards. Like he just jumps up there and people were like losing their minds. And then he was like dancing, like, he's a big Tennessee Volunteers fan. He'd be like, he's dancing like at the stadium out there in Knoxville. Like, he starts getting requests to do all this stuff. And like, this is the crazy thing about virality is like, sometimes you're like, oh, if only I could go viral, this would be my big break. And he went viral and he's like, yeah, Dan, well, cool. I mean, this is cool what I do. He became like this very famous guy who like is the person that like you kind of want to go famous, which is like, it didn't seem to change him one bit.
When we come back, Jeremy Markovich talks about how a nice low-stakes investigation is sometimes exactly what his audience needs.
The worst thing you can say to a journalist is like, how is this news? And for me, I'm like, that's my rallying cry. Like, it's not, man.
That and more ahead on Southbound. Before we get back to this episode, I wanted to ask for a little help with something. If you enjoy Southbound, please give us a good rating and write us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast provider you have that allows such things. The more reviews and better ratings we get, the better chance there is that other listeners can find us. But to be honest, I'd just as soon you tell people about Southbound through good old word of mouth. If you could recommend it to just one person you know, somebody you might think would enjoy interesting conversations about the South, I'd be deeply grateful. If you have any thoughts about the show, guests to recommend, or anything that you think might make Southbound better, you can email me at ttomlinson@wfae.org. Thanks so much for giving us a little bit of your time. And now, back to my conversation with Jeremy Markovich. You know, you've done a lot of different stories on really wide range of subjects as part of the rabbit hole. Are there certain elements that you think make for a good rabbit hole story?
What makes for a good rabbit hole story is often, it's like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. Like, that hadn't occurred to me. And sometimes it's something that I see where it's like, people are talking about something, but they're missing something, right? Like, there's something else there that is not worthy of, like, taking up space on public radio or in the newspaper or whatever, right? Like, this feels like, hey, I am on the internet. I have unlimited space. I can walk out on something. And I'm, at this point, for the purposes of this newsletter, sort of my own boss. I'm not going to tell me no. So I'm just going to go after it and see where it goes. And I've had a couple of things where I'm like, actually, I get down the road and it kind of, it does peter out. But a lot of times, I just sort of refuse to let it go. And I also think that for me in this stage of my career, like, the rabbit hole is not my day job. I can do what I want to do. And if it doesn't work, then I just do another thing, right? If it does work, then neat. And I think along the way, the journey of trying to figure something out new is interesting to me. Like, I'm very curious about stuff. I love to find out new stuff. And if it's, sometimes it's easy to track down. Sometimes it's, you have to enlist a small army of people to work on your behalf. But I think if it holds my interest, then I'm going to do it.
Do you have sort of a regular network of tipsters now who are sending you weird ideas?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Like, and there's a lot of them. It's interesting because I think there's a standard of people that will send me stuff. And I think a lot of it is like, hey, here's a thing about North Carolina that I didn't really realize. Like I think there's some basic stuff, like people go, oh, hey, why is it that people like really care about like the different styles of barbecue, or like, what is it about this thing or that? And like, there's been a lot written about that. But like, one of my favorite ones that somebody was just like, why is Steven Spielberg wearing this yellow State Highway Patrol hat?
Yes.
On the set of an Indiana Jones movie in 1989? Like, you see this? And I'm like, huh, yeah. Why is he doing that? And that was one where it's like, okay, I've got to enlist a ton of different people. And it took me a few months, and it finally like actually led me to the guy who gave him the hat. Those sorts of things were like, look, nobody really cares about this, but like, I think there's an interesting story here. Like, yeah, like I will jump on that. I think the worst thing I ever see online of people talking to journalists, other than like really the terrible things that people are saying to journalists, but like the worst thing you can say to a journalist is like, how is this news? And for me, I'm like, that's my rallying cry. Like, it's not, man. Like, this thing happened in 1989, but somebody was curious about it, and I'm going to do it.
So you've been doing this for like four and a half years now. How did it get, I don't even remember. You've probably talked about it online, but I don't remember how it got started.
I was at Our State Magazine at the time. So my quick background is, I'm not from North Carolina, as you can tell by my accent. I'm from Northeast Ohio, where it's cloudy. Like, I think it's overcast like 300 days a year there. So I was like, well, eventually I'm going to move a little bit further south. And so went to college in Ohio, worked in West Virginia for like 3.5 years at the local TV station, worked in Charlotte for about 10 years at WCNC TV, and then during that time, I became started doing some magazine writing. So I wrote for the wonderful Rick Thurmond at Charlotte Magazine. That led me to Mike Graff at Charlotte Magazine, which then led me to other, writing gigs around North Carolina and beyond. And then that led me to a full-time job at Our State Magazine. And so for about 4.5 years, I got to travel around North Carolina on somebody else's dime and just like meet people in like big cities, small towns, that sort of a thing, right? So like during my time at Our State Magazine, I visited Murphy 4 times. Like who does that?
That's a long trip.
It is a long trip. And I have a soft spot in my heart for Murphy, which it's just a crazy, weird, interesting, wild place. But I got to do that. Like, right? Like I got to do all these stories, started a podcast while I was there and got to do more. I think as my time there started coming to an end, I was starting to do less of what I wanted to do. And I was like, well, I should write some more. Like I haven't written as much about topical stuff as I used to. And I was like, maybe I might start looking for something else. Right. And so I started this newsletter, right? And it had no, it wasn't like I was like, well, this is my master plan. I will, take over the world in like 5 years. I'm like, no, I'm just gonna try to write stuff every once in a while. And it did well. And so after I left Our State, I kept the newsletter going. I work now in communications at Wake Forest University. But then on my free time, I try once a week to write something that is interesting about North Carolina. And that's sort of how it started. And then just, I'll even say like the Mick Jagger story got Nash, like it was on CNN. Like it was like it as much as anything has blown up, it blew up. But that like it's not like, oh, I wrote a bunch of things and they blew up. And then now I have this a lot of subscribers. I just have subscribers by just plugging away for 4.5 years.
Have you always been the type of person to sort of dive down the rabbit hole? I mean, has that like been kind of a hallmark of not just your work, but maybe as a kid too?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day about he was like, oh, my dad worked for like Rand McNally, and I was like, oh, no way! I would like I consumed Rand McNally atlases like they were the Bible. Like was obsessed with roads, and like my parents bought me like roadmaps for like a birthday, and I was like I just needed to know everything about everything, right? And like I wouldn't even drive it at this point. It was like I was a kid. I've always been really, really into stuff. I feel like I can't let it go until like I get to a point where either like I get the answer or it's very clear to me that I'm not going to get the answer. But it's just very easy for me to just throw all of my effort into like a thing.
I wonder also if there's something about the low stakesness of it that makes it especially appealing now, in the sense that, just the news of the day. You probably started, I'm guessing COVID was still a really big deal. Maybe back when you started, we were between two Trump administrations. I just wonder, with like everything seeming to be just on the edge of disaster day to day, whether this is like a nice escape in some way.
It is. And I think one of the things that's interesting to me about it is sort of the rise of smaller communities that are not, I guess, dependent on social media is kind of a nice thing, right? Like, so one of the things, and like I think during the meat of my career, I was definitely helped like a lot of journalists by the fact that like Twitter was there, or like things could spread on social media, right? So like I wrote a story in 2013 about a NASCAR driver named Dick Trickle, and it caught like wildfire because it was in the area where like people would read stuff and they would be like, oh, you should read this. And they would share the story and things could blow up. And then that would like allow me to sort of quote unquote get out there, and then could lead to other work for me, or would lead people to read it. Like, and like that was all possible back then. Well, now, like if you put something on social media, it doesn't go anywhere. And it's become much more toxic. And now the people are splitting off into their own factions on different sites and whatever that might be. Like if you put something out there that challenges anything that people hold dear or even like casually care about, they're going to get mad and they're going to come after you. In like newsletter world, if I share a link to my newsletter online, nobody, the amount of people that like click on it now is very low. And so I feel like I've been able to be in a spot where I can kind of do what I want and there's fewer people out there going like, hey, why didn't you, you're writing about this dumb thing, but look at this other thing that's happening out here. Like, why are we wasting time on this stupid thing when like people are losing their livelihoods, like rights are being taken away, like that sort of a thing. I feel like some pull to it sometimes, right? Or I feel like occasionally there are lessons from history that you can look into and you can say like, oh, well, this explains that. Like, right, like I was mentioning, like, what can we learn about, you know, the flood in Asheville from last year versus the flood of 1916, right? Like, I think there's lessons from history there. I think there's also lessons from history about somebody that like switched their parties one time. Like, remember like, Trisha Cotham who switched her party, and people were like, that's crazy, that's never happened before. And I'm like, it did happen before, actually, you know. But like when it happened, it was sort of like this dude who everybody's like, yeah, that's just Jesse, that's what he does, you know. It was just sort of like, fine, we know you're gonna do this, whatever. It was not a big deal, and now it is, like, it reads completely differently, right? And so I think like I am lucky to have, I deeply care about all these things, but I'm lucky to have a platform or the space to be able to sort of get away from it and do it. I don't think, you know, every once in a while it's like, hey, if you're reading this and you're like, why are we doing this? Like, I do care about all this stuff, but there's a lot of people out there who are doing a lot of great work on all of this other stuff. And I am reading their work, and I think you should too. And if you would like to come to my corner of the internet to check out what I got going on, because you need a break, or you're just genuinely curious, or you think that's what matters, then like, come on by. And nobody's, I don't think anymore with this, especially with the splintering of everything, that everybody is asking like one person to do everything, right? They're not asking this podcast to like when are you going to talk to Trump, right? Like, when's your Biden exclusive going to drop, Tommy? And then like, because you don't do that, you don't care. It's like, no, I got my thing I'm doing. This is where I live. This is what I'm interested in. This is how I'm trying to help people grow and learn. And that works for me. And for me, it's like, again, if you read something dumb, but you learn a new fact out of it, then I feel like, okay, I can feel good about what I've done.
Ever since Jeremy Markovich started doing the North Carolina Rabbit Hole, I thought there ought to be a Rabbit Hole franchise. I'd love to read the Georgia Rabbit Hole, or the Tennessee Rabbit Hole, or, Lord help us, the Louisiana Rabbit Hole. Most of the stories Jeremy does aren't news in the way we think about news today, but I think they are news in the oldest and most traditional sense. They're little puzzle pieces that help us understand something bigger, even as we know we'll never fully complete the puzzle. Why do people work on puzzles? When they need a distraction. And there are few things more valuable these days than a good distraction. Not to make us forget everything else going on in the world, but to give us a few minutes of blessed relief. As for me, I need more Zeb Ross in my life. I need more old skateboard photos. I need Mick Jagger hanging around dive bars. I'm not gonna live down in the rabbit hole, but man, it feels pretty good to spend a couple hours down there with Jeremy and all the other members of the tribe. Southbound is a production of WFAE in Charlotte. Our editors are Eli Portillo and Jen Lang. Our main theme music comes from Joshua Lee Turner. You can listen to this and other episodes of Southbound on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the NPR app, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Subscribe for free to get each new episode sent to you when it's ready. You can also find Southbound on our website. Just go to wfae.org/podcast/southbound. See y'all next time. Thanks for listening.